Welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Alicia Paulson. Alicia is the BSA officer at Honor Bank in Traverse City, Michigan, with over 12 years of experience in the banking industry. Her career began as a high school teller in her hometown of Ithaca, Michigan, and while she attended Central Michigan University and earned her bachelor's degree in marketing, she was able to continue tellering all through college. After 5 years in Chicago's property management sector, she returned to Michigan, stepping into an assistant branch manager role for a larger financial institution, where her love for BSA compliance truly began. When the pandemic reshaped her family's plan, she and her husband moved to Northern Michigan, where she joined Honor Bank. Within 6 months, the opportunity arose for her to step into her dream role as BSA officer, a position she's held ever since. Combining her operational expertise with a deep commitment to protecting her institution and its customers. Welcome, Alicia. I'm so glad to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you. Excited to be here. It was a great intro, yeah. So thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. So I would love for you to dig into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty as to how you did land as BSA officer and what kind of passions you noticed along the way.
Yeah, so as you had mentioned, Lindsay, my husband and I moved up here to Traverse City from downstate Michigan and essentially began with Honor Bank as an assistant branch manager at one of our downtown locations and really liked the company. I've always had a niche for kind of investigating things, which is really where the BSA component comes into my role. So from the start of this job with Honor Bank, I've always had my eyes on BSA. I knew from the start when I started with Honor Bank, I really wanted to land in the BSA role. And it just so happened to work out that, gosh, it was probably 6 months after I started that the previous person in the position had stepped away from the company and took a different opportunity. And the role opened up for me and I jumped on it and fortunately got the position, and I've been in this role for, gosh, 4.5 years. I just celebrated my 5-year anniversary over the weekend with Honor Bank. So that's kind of how it all unfolded.
That's great. It's so funny. The more guests that I get to interview and ask that question, people sometimes stumble into banking, which most of the time people start as tellers and then they decide, I can make a career out of this. I've talked to several different state banking association representatives about how they're really trying to educate our future workforce as banking as a career, because it's such a diverse industry that not many people are talking about.
That's so true. And,
yeah. And I mean, you went to college for marketing. That probably wasn't in your plan to circle back to banking, and it wasn't mine either. And now here I am 15 years later.
It is so true. And a lot of people think, you know, with the advance in technology that eventually banks will go away, but I don't find that to be the case. There's always going to need to be, you know, the human need and the person behind, you know, analyzing on the back end, especially from my perspective. We have, you know, softwares, but there's always going to need to be an individual behind it. So it's a little bit of job security too.
Absolutely. So today, as we kind of dive into our topic, I really want to start with the fraud and the scams that you guys are seeing in your location and how that's affecting the bank and then the customers as well.
Yeah, gosh, frauds and scams are just so prevalent out there. And I try to do my best as far as educating the public and the community. And Honor Bank as a whole has gotten out there a little bigger of a footprint when it comes to educating the customers and the community in general. But what we're seeing mostly here in Northern Michigan is, of course, your everyday check fraud, which I find kind of ironic in the century that we were in, because checks you would think would be a thing of the past, but it is so easy to compromise the information. All the information you need is on the face of a check: the account number, the customer's information, their address, the routing number of the institution. I mean, you're essentially giving that information away when you write a check, and fraudsters know that. So they take full advantage and they'll either counterfeit the item, which is duplicating that exact check and making it to a different payee, or they'll alter it where they alter the information on the original check to make it payable to themselves. So we're seeing a lot of just good old-fashioned check fraud, a lot of online account compromising, which typically stems from phishing. I'm sure we're all familiar with phishing or the scam text that you receive to click on a link, or the emails that you receive to click on a link, and the sense of urgency behind those, unfortunately, you know, reels a lot of people in to fall victim of it. And so we've seen a lot of scams that have started with phishing. So the fraudster will get their online banking creds and then just go to town. Fortunately, we have preventative measures in place where most of the time we're able to stop the bleeding and put the fire out before it gets bad. But I mean, I've seen all ends of it where the customer has taken a loss. It's unfortunate that it's out there, but it's just going to continue and evolve as technologies, you know, become more fluid.
Yes, absolutely. And I know there's several of the state banking associations that have been lobbying for a lot stricter check fraud repercussions as far as the punishment for it and the, making it a higher level of crime just because it is so prevalent. Has Michigan started doing a push towards that as well?
I will say that I have definitely, in my time here with Honor Bank, seen more collaboration with the banks. When I first started, it was kind of a big, you know, no-no world as far as reaching out to another institution to gain insight on maybe a mutual customer that you have. But in today's world, I have seen the collaboration, you know, come together between financial institutions, which is a huge help when we're all working to fight the same battle. Essentially, there would be no need to not communicate certain information amongst each other. But I will say that, yeah, the collaboration amongst institutions has definitely, you know, increased and been a lot better since the time that I started. As for the state of Michigan, I can't really, you know, speak on that behalf, but I do foresee it getting better with the organizations that I'm part of. As far as banking communities and networking, we're all in the same boat and just trying to work together and collaborate. And I try to be part of those organizations here in Northern Michigan just for that purpose and that reason. You know, networking and connecting with other institutions, having a point of contact is huge in this world. Law enforcement, financial institutions, whatever it may be. But just gaining that insight and collaborating as a whole has been huge.
Absolutely. To me, that in the BSA officer role, having that network, and then also if your institution's part of 314B, it just opens you up to such a possibility to be able to collaborate. I read something the other day, someone had written talking about from the perspective of all of the bad guys are in a network together. What would it look like if we were all working together against them as well? And that was in reference to money laundering and trying to push for more institutions joining and being part of 314B, because it can make such a difference in the research and the information you're able to collect and share.
Absolutely. And I love 314B. It's one of my favorite components of this position, is reaching out to other institutions that participate and just getting more insight on a scammer or a fraudster or a customer of ours or whatever it may be. But just, you know, helping to combat that illicit activity that they're engaging in or whatever it may be. So I like how you said the fraudsters are all working together, because that is so true. You watch the movies, and I mean, it is somewhat true. It is, as far as them working together, this is their profession. You know, a lot of people are embarrassed to admit they got scammed, but I try to tell them that this is the fraudster's career. They're professionals at this. They know what they're doing. But yeah, you said that perfectly.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you guys at Honor Bank, y'all have worked towards trying to help your customers and educate them. What are some of those steps that you've done, maybe an event, a specific push that you guys have done to really try to help? Because in my opinion, I feel like educating the public is the quickest and most surefire way that we're really going to be able to try to help the most people in prevention, but I'd love to hear what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So we're always looking for new paths and avenues, but I would say our biggest thing right now is probably social media. I'm very active with LinkedIn and I try to get things out there. We have a great marketing team as well that does a lot on Facebook, on X. And then we try to get out there as far as fraud prevention and do some like seminars, or I've teamed up with law enforcement. That seems to be a big hit out there when you team up with law enforcement and they're able to bring real life examples, and especially just those individuals having that one-on-one time with law enforcement, if they've been victim, it's just adds so much value. So we've gotten out there and done some fraud prevention with law enforcement. I've done some small business fraud prevention in downtown Traverse City. That's a heavy business populated area. So, you know, kind of tailoring it towards the small businesses, social media. We participate in Banks Never Ask That, which is an ABA campaign, American Banking Association. And that's been huge too, just giving the public, you know, tidbits of advice of, you know, banks never ask that question. So be mindful of what you're responding to. And then any flyers or posters or any collateral that I can get, I always distribute that to our branches. We have 8 branches in the surrounding Traverse City area. So getting that collateral out there and just having it in front of the customers as they wait in line for the next, you know, available customer service rep, just reading that material, it might hit them or it might relate to somebody they know. But just helping one person, I always say, is huge in my eyes, because it's going to spiral and help another. So.
Absolutely. And so with the growing rate of fraud and scam, what change have you seen over the 4.5 years that you've been BSA officer in how the bank handles it and how you're training your employees?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say we have changed so much for the better in the 5 years that I've been here. I mean, like I'd mentioned before, frauds and scams, they are only going to get worse, you know, so we're trying to, and not just on our bank, but financial institutions as a whole, trying to stay ahead of the game. So I think what we have done here, and of course you learn by experience, so you don't know something's going to happen until it happens. And then it's like, okay, what can we do to prevent that from happening again? So we created a task, the BESC task force, I guess you could call it. And it was an internal task force group that essentially we just put a bunch of ideas together as far as mitigating risk and preventing fraud and what we could do. We had people from all departments, you know, join this task force, and just collaborate and put our heads together on what we could do. And we really attacked the initiatives that we had. And it became like this successful win in my eyes. And a lot of those initiatives were implemented, if not all of them, and just really helped prevent fraud on the back end. As far as manual processes that we changed, policies that we updated, more people doing different tasks, maybe that cross different areas, more people reviewing certain things. We also created, I think, one of our most successful initiatives that came out of that group was creating a fraud group email. Being a small community bank, we don't necessarily have a fraud department. So we all work together in a sense, BSA compliance, deposit operations, and our digital team. So that email group that we created essentially had all those groups within it. So when the frontline experienced something fraudulent, they would just email that group and everybody just attacked and did what they needed to do on their end to, again, stop the bleeding. And that was huge for us. We had the accounts restricted immediately, you know, online access was no longer available. And it really helped combat the fraud from a back end standpoint. So that and collaborating with other institutions too and seeing what they're doing. Again, I think I had mentioned that I belong to a lot of community organization groups up here too, and just hearing what other institutions are doing and me sharing what we're doing too is huge to collaborate and be in this together too.
Absolutely. And I think you speaking to how you guys are a community bank, tons of our listeners and our members are also community banks. And so taking the idea and like kind of the stress off of having to create an entire fraud department and instead creating what you called a task force. I love that. I feel like it would be such an actionable step that a bank of any size can really tailor to their needs, again, without having to add that extra kind of set of department and a head and everything. I think that's a great solution to get the people that and have boots on the ground and get, like you said, the movement of things to be so fast, so much faster. It's a great idea.
It is. Yeah. And I like to share what we've done too, as a community bank. When I go to, you know, say my BSA seminars, it's interesting to hear how different institutions do different things. You know, they learn from me, I learn from them, and we bring it back to our own institutions and hopefully put something into place and implement what we've learned. So collaborating is huge.
Yes, for sure. And that's what a lot of my personal friends, they find such a disengagement from what I actually do to like the fact that I am very creative in my personal life and everything. But I also think of the options that we have as to how we can set up and structure things. To me, that is a level of creativity that we have to really dig into, because when you are a community bank, you know your community, you know your personnel, and to be able to think outside of the box to find a solution that serves your bank and your customers, to me, that's the goal of our role, and that's the best use of creativity in this job line for sure.
Absolutely. And it's great to have different minds that collaborate together, because we don't all think the same and we need all those different types of brains to be able to come together and, you know, really analyze the situation as a whole and put all of those good thoughts to use. So definitely, yes, creative for sure is big.
Absolutely. And so I would like to ask, like specifically, I know just recently FinCEN has pushed out guidance around the Bitcoin kiosks. Have y'all had a lot of scams involving those? I know the banks that I work with, every bank except for one has had major customer loss involving these kiosks. I was just wondering what y'all have seen in regards to those as well.
Yeah, we definitely have. It's unfortunate. I'll share on a story here that happened probably within the last year, but we do have a couple of those kiosks located within Traverse City. And we had an elderly customer come in and withdraw a very large sum of cash, which was out of the norm for that particular customer, which always raises some red flags, you know. And these customers, unfortunately, are coached what to say and what to tell us as a bank, not for us to draw red flags, right? So they're coached on what they're telling us they're using the money for. And something just fell off about this customer. And the moral of the story is this customer took a large sum of cash downtown Traverse City to put into this Bitcoin machine to send essentially to a scammer. But the people at it was at a gas station, the Bitcoin machine was kiosked at, and they are trained, that staff there, to look out for the vulnerable demographic, you know, the elderly people, and just to be mindful of what's going on out there at that ATM. So they ended up contacting law enforcement. Law enforcement contacted Honor Bank because this gentleman had his receipt. They knew the money came from us. Was able to stop him, and he ended up coming back the next day and depositing that cash and thanking everybody involved. But that, I mean, that was fortunately a happy ending, but I've also seen the opposite end where they either mail the money in cash or they deposit it into one of these kiosks. And once that money is gone, it's gone. I mean, there's no way of getting that back. So that's the unfortunate thing of these Bitcoin untraceable, you know, paths of committing the crimes is, and the scammers know that as well, is there's no trackable way to trace it. So we have nothing to go off of to help our customers. So just, again, comes back to educating and educating the customers on why not to do that.
Absolutely. And you brought up a great point that I hadn't necessarily thought about, but banks that, because I know several of the customers within the banks that I work with, they do have Bitcoin ATMs on site, and educating the employees on what to look for would be a whole other avenue of prevention that banks could help implement. I think that's a great idea. And even if your customer has a private ATM that accepts deposits, that would again be another really great option of how to educate your those employees at the location where those ATMs are at, or those Bitcoin kiosks. That's a great idea.
Absolutely.
And how lucky for that customer that they had someone there to say.
Yes.
Because and I've seen the opposite again and again, and it's heartbreaking. Yes,
it is. And Bitcoin is prevalent in today's world, and it's not a bad thing by any means, but it's when those fraudsters, you know, manipulate the tactic and take advantage of, you know, the people on the other side, and then it becomes a bad thing. But as long as our customers are educated, and, you know, that's ultimately my goal, is to share the wealth of knowledge that I've learned just from going through these scenarios and experiencing it firsthand, and sharing what I know to help another one from falling victim.
Absolutely. And so, Alicia, as we wrap up today, what's one piece of advice you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Oh, gosh, my piece of advice is always, you know, to trust your gut. I've mentioned this before, and my frontline staff knows too. It's just like when something feels off, it probably is. That gut there, the gut feeling is there for a reason, that intuitive sense. So if a customer comes in and does a behavior that's out of their norm, just to trust that feeling that there's something's telling you it's off, then it probably is. So that's my key takeaway, is just when something doesn't feel right, even from the victim standpoint, you know, getting an urgent text and it just feels urgent and off, just to trust that instinct and take a step back and take a breath, ask a friend, don't act immediately, just pause for a moment and really dive into your intuition.
Yes, I love that. Well, thank you so much, Alicia, for taking time out of your day to share with us. I really think that this episode is going to be great for all of our listeners. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.